Hi, I'm Janelle.
And I'm Monique.
And welcome to Is Marriage Worth It?
We are just two single chicks, girls, women.
Anything but females.
Trying to figure out what marriage is like and is it worth it?
I'm assuming the best place to get the answers is from married people. Maybe engaged people, newlyweds, and even other singles.
Each episode, we will have a guest answering different questions we have or that you may have about marriage.
Join us as we try to figure out, is marriage worth it?
And if it is, I wonder if my future husband or yours is listening right now. Hi, I'm Monique.
And I'm Janelle.
And welcome back to another episode of
Is Marriage Worth It?
So our guest today is Jonathan. And the way that he became a guest, once upon a time, he filled out that link, guys. I know I'm terrible with getting back to people on that Google Sheets. So he is also one of those that I finally figured out how to find that sheet again. And he was willing to be a guest. So thank you so much, Jonathan, for taking the time out.
Yeah, absolutely. So that must have been on like podcastguest.com. Is that right?
I think so. It was one of those. Yeah. It was when we were first starting out and I didn't know how to use any of those, so I lost it, and then back up.
That's funny. The struggle is real because I had my podcast listed on there, and I got over 200 requests to come on the show, and there was just no way I could answer all of them because, my show does quite well, if I could say so, but that means a lot of requests come in that I'm not able to get to, and that's just kind of the nature of it. So I understand the struggle.
We appreciate it. So to kick things off, can you just tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, well, I'm Canadian. So I live, for those south of the border, I live north of Montana, east of the Rocky Mountains in a province called Alberta. I'm an online nutrition coach as well as a podcaster. I run a podcast called Between the Before and After. And I've had a lot of careers in my life, from nanotechnology researcher to marine engineer to power line technician, traveling English teacher, supplement store owner, equipment operator in the oil field. It took me a long time to kind of figure out what I wanted to do with my life. And so it's been kind of this fun journey of adventure that my wife has come along with for 17 years.
Oh, wow. Congratulations.
Well, thank you.
All right. So we know you've been married for 17 years. How did you meet?
Well, that was pretty random. So my wife is from Australia. If you go back like 17 years, we're going back. In fact, you have to go back 20 years to when we first met. This is pre-Facebook, like pre a lot of social media. We had like MSN Messenger. So any of the like over 40s or late 30s might know what MSN Messenger is, but
anybody remember Zanga?
Oh, there you go. There was one chat platform called ICQ, like the letters ICQ, and you could combine multiple chat platforms in there. So like Yahoo Chat and MSN and all this kind of stuff. And so that was like our version of social media. But she actually met some friends of mine in Vancouver. I was living on Vancouver Island, so the west coast of Canada. And they just called me up randomly. I was at university and they're like, "Hey, we have this cute girl from Australia. Do you want to show her around? Cause we're busy today." I'm like, "Sure." who's going to say no to that? Like what red blooded male is going to say no to that? And so, she just kind of got dumped in my lap in front of a Max convenience store. And it was a little bit awkward at first, like, hi, I guess we're kind of stuck together. So, that was kind of the start of it. But we ended up having so much fun that day that we called our friends, and said, "Hey, you know what? You might as well come pick us up at midnight instead of 9, because like we're going to hang out for a bit longer yet." So, that was how that ended. So it was a total like random setup, and it was not expected to go very well. It actually went way better than expected.
I need to get some better friends. I need friends 1,000%. That will just drop somebody off and say, "Hey, take this person around."
And again, because it's like pre-social media, like there's no way to like, you know, check out somebody's profile or Google their name or things like that. It just like wasn't a thing. It was right. Now that I think back, I'm like, man, there was like a lot of trust associated with that.
Yes.
Like she had to trust my friends because she hadn't known them for very long. Like she'd met them in Vancouver. Like she was a solo traveler at 18, just traveling around the world. And you know, when you're a solo traveler, you just kind of meet people and you make friendships, and we've both traveled around the world, and you kind of are just trusting, but I'm like, boy, that could go sideways when I think back. But I don't know, when you're like 18 or 19, you don't care. You're like, oh, well, it's life.
it'll all work out.
Yeah. Yeah. That's how we felt about it. So, and so we ended up hanging out for, I got to see her the one other day. So we hung out for one more day. We went frisbee golfing actually. And she'd never been frisbee golfing before. And then we had to take her back to the ferry terminal to go back to the mainland. And, I thought I'd never see her again. Like I thought it was just like, hey, it was a fun like day or two, like hanging out, but she handed me a paper note and it says a gum tree note from Michelle. So gum trees are really common in Australia. That's what koalas live in. And so okay. A gum tree note from Michelle had her Hotmail address on it. So, yeah. So about a week later, I was like, I should email that girl that I met from Australia, you know, and this started this email conversation that kind of went back and forth for about 8 or 9 months. And I was like, you know, I feel like there's like a little bit of chemistry here. And so I plucked up my courage and was like, hey, could I have your phone number? And so we started talking on the phone. And this is back in the day of phone cards. And you had to decide.
Exactly. Long distance.
Yeah.
Long distance.
Yeah. Do you go the connection fee, the $1.69 connection fee, and then the 1 cent a minute? Or do you do the 6 cents a minute with no connection fee? Like that's what we had to decide. Big decisions, you know?
Big decisions.
Yeah. So that was kind of the start of this. And then we just kind of, we talked on the phone, ended up talking almost every day. So with the time difference between Canada and Australia, it was about seven hours time difference. And so she was like 7 hours back, but one day ahead because they're 19 hours ahead of, or 17 hours ahead. And so I would be in the lab in the morning. I was a chemistry major. So I'd be in the lab in the morning, like doing my lab work. And then I'd be on my computer, like chatting with her, like on MSN Messenger or whatever. And then we would like chat back and forth. And we would phone each other with phone cards, like in the evening kind of thing. And that was how this relationship developed over a span of 2.5 years of never seeing each other. Never had a photo of her either. I should mention that. I did not have a photo of this girl. I only had a picture in my mind of that one day that I got to hang out with her 2.5 years later before I saw her again.
So I'm 32. So I like to think that I'm not that young.
Yeah.
The way you talk about this, I'm just like, that is ancient history. You didn't even get a photo of her. Nobody thought, hey, let's get my digital camera and get a real quick pic.
Well, if you remember back in the day, like it was expensive to buy memory cards. Like I remember getting like a 4 megabyte like memory card. It was like $50 or something. Like we don't even think about it now. Like, oh, I have an 800 gigabyte something or whatever, like no big deal. Right. But back then it was so expensive. And so we occasionally wrote letters to each other, like in the mail.
Aww.
Yeah. Because we were like, I don't know. There's something nice. It probably, you know what, if I wrote a letter to somebody today, they'd probably be shocked, but really delighted because you know that it takes effort to put pen to paper and write something. So yeah, exactly. We did that a couple times too.
Okay, please tell me you still have at least one.
I probably do. I wouldn't know where. It's probably in one of our 800 boxes in our storage space. I'm picturing this old like chocolates container, this chocolates tin, you know, one of those fancy ones that comes with a lid and there's a bunch of letters in there. And so I'm quite sure if I could ever find it again, that I would probably find it in there.
I love this.
So you guys did this for about 2.5 years.
Yes.
So what made you like keep going? Cause it's like, okay, she's really far away, but what was that kept you talking to her?
I think there was just a chemistry there. It was, we seemed to just connect and we seemed to be able to talk about just about anything and enjoy each other's company. So what's kind of funny is, she'd had a boyfriend and I'd had a girlfriend, but we hadn't told each other about this. but her mom said, you know, oh, hey, it's that, you know, Canadian guy calling again. You know, is your Canadian boyfriend? And Michelle's like, my wife's name is Michelle. And she was like, no, no, mom, we're just friends. You know, we you know, and her mom was like, that's some serious, like you guys are talking every night. And so when I would call, she would say, Michelle, it's serious, like, and so she started calling me that. But she said to her, she said, look, you talk to your boyfriend for like 15 minutes and you're crying. You talk to this guy from Canada for like 3 hours and all I hear is you laughing like the whole time. Do you see a connection here? And so Yeah. So eventually, I eventually told her, like, look, you're just going to have to come back to Canada, come back and see me again. Like, cause she'd said she wanted to come back to Canada and travel more, like go across the country. Cause she'd only seen like the West Coast, and you know, Canada's a huge country. Huge. And so I was like, well, yeah, you just have to come back. And so, and that was quite a story in and of itself if we get into that. So.
So was it your idea for her? Cause how did you guys meet back up? To get to where you guys are.
So she did eventually buy a plane ticket, come back to Canada. And now I'm thinking, so this is 2.5 years. This is going to be like about July 2005. And so I'm thinking, so I remember emailing her and saying, you know, I don't know what you look like, really. I have this vague idea, but you haven't sent me a photo. You're flying into Vancouver Airport, which is the second busiest airport in Canada, in July, which is like the busiest time. Airport. I'm like, how on earth am I going to find you? In a sea of like tens of thousands of people. And she's like, I'll wear a colorful hat. Right. So it comes to that day. July 30th, 2005. And, so I'm waiting in the arrivals area, and you know how you normally you have to like clear customs and you go through like a couple of doors, whatever, and you come out the other side. And then usually there's like sort of this barrier and you kind of have to walk along in front of this barrier and then you kind of get out, I guess. And so it is like the busiest at Vancouver Airport, and the doors open and out comes this girl wearing a Tigger costume. And she is like hopping behind her luggage trolley, like Tigger. And I knew right away who that was.
But that's not a bright hat.
But I couldn't get to her because there were so many people. Like, it was just so crowded. And of course she is now thinking, like, this guy better be here, damn it, because like, yes! I just flew halfway around the world, you know, put on a Tigger costume, and I'm now at the airport on the busiest day and I can't find this guy, because of course she doesn't know what I look like either. Because we had an exchange photo. And so anyways, but of course I knew who she was. And so I'm trying to like make my way through the crowd to kind of get to her. And somebody, you know, stops her to say like, hey, you know, because everybody started cheering, right? Like who's expecting like Tigger to come through the doors at the airport, right? So like people were just like cheering and clapping randomly because, oh, hey, there's Tigger. And so she was lapping it all up, like waving and, you know, whatever. Because my wife's actually, she's a performer. She's a theater performer. And so she was like, yeah. So she was like hamming up with all the attention and whatnot. And so, but someone stops her to, you know, just as she kind of comes around where you can get out, someone stops her to ask her, well, how come you're wearing a Tigger costume? And then I was able to kind of get to her. So she turns around, there it was, like right there. And then she jumps into my arms and like wraps her arms and her legs around me. And I kissed her right there. I was like, that's it. Like, I've waited this long. And everybody started cheering. It was like this movie moment. Like everyone started clapping and cheering. They're like, wow, you know, and then she got like all shy all of a sudden. So then she like buried her head in my shoulder, like, you know, wait, what am I doing? You know? And so that she always tries to tell me that like she was just planning to come over as a friend first and kind of get to know me a bit better in person, which I think was a total fabrication. But because underneath her Tigger costume, she was wearing a Winnie the Pooh shirt that said, "Be my honey."
She's so cute.
She is. So she thinks of everything. She's very, very, she's got a great mind for like creative details like that. And you know, Winnie the Pooh spells honey like H-U-N-N-Y. So
yeah.
So we got the bus back to Victoria, which is the main city on Vancouver Island. And on the ferry ride over, like we just found a corner and made out like a couple school kids like in the back of the bus kind of thing. Because it was like 2.5 years of sort of this like building relationship where we felt like we were like very close friends because we'd talked so much, but we just hadn't had that time like physically together in person.
Right.
So, okay, what happens next?
Yeah. Well, it was pretty clear that we had great chemistry, and it was like not starting from zero in a sense. And so within 4 months I had proposed to her. So I knew that we were like, as soon as we had been together for like a couple of weeks, I was like, this is the one, you know, I just kind of knew it.
Wait, how long was she staying in Canada?
Well, she had planned to stay for 3 months. But she actually ended up extending her stay by 3 more months. She never did get to go across Canada because she spent the entire time in Victoria, where I was living. And actually, there's some other like kind of fortuitous timing, if you will. I'd had a motorcycle accident a month before she came to Canada.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And so my leg was injured and I was in the Navy at the time. So I wasn't able to be deployed because I had a leg injury. I can't go on a ship with a leg injury. And so I was stuck at, I would have to just go to an office for like 2 hours a day and pretend to answer a phone that didn't ring. So I was like doing something to justify being paid. And then I would just go home and hang out with her. Like, so we're just like a couple of hamsters. And we, back in the day, you had like DVDs that you would like burn pirated movies on from like Napster and LimeWire. Like,
you didn't. Not when you work in the Navy.
Right. Of course not. Of course we didn't do that. So I had this like entire folder. So we would just like watch movies and hang out like a couple of hamsters, you know? Not doing a whole lot. I mean, I had friends and had a social life, but I just mean they had to work during the day and I didn't. So.
Okay. So 4 months in, you decided, well, granted 4 months plus the 2.5 years that you knew.
Yes.
But 4 months in, you decided to propose. What was that like?
It was probably a little bit more nerve wracking than I thought, because I was pretty sure she felt the same way. Like we hadn't really, like some people talk about it and they just talk about like one day, you know, and but we hadn't really talked about it. Like, yes, I think you're the one, I think we're gonna get married, that kind of thing. But it was kind of more of a feeling. And so, I decided to tell her like, we're going to go on a date, but it's a surprise date and I'm not going to tell you where we're going. So I blindfolded her and I drove all around the city and I wanted to make sure she would have no idea where we were. She didn't know the city that well, but after 5 months, she had a half decent idea. So drive her all around the city. She's blindfolded, doesn't know where she is. Okay. So I get her out of the car and she's still blindfolded. So I walk her to a set of steps and I get her up on the steps. And then, so while she's standing there, I get down on one knee and I say, okay, you can take your blindfold off. And so I've got the ring there. And, you know, I said, you know, will you marry me and be my princess forever? And so when she turned around, she was on the steps of a castle.
I am blown away.
Yeah.
Man, so, I don't know if I can smile any harder than I am right now.
So of course, you know, she said yes. And, We had some bubbly grape. I think I'd pack some sparkling apple juice or something like that because she doesn't drink alcohol. And so we had some of that on the steps of the castle and some people took some photos of us. And so I do have some photos from our engagement. But again, this is old school, like, you know, print.
Honestly, those are probably your first photos together.
Yeah, it was like we didn't have a lot of documented history. Like, I think it's we just forget because now, you know, we have, I don't know, probably a million photos quite legitimately because, you know, but back then we didn't. And so now we got to like call her family and tell her that like I've proposed and whatnot. And so she's like, oh, you have to ask my dad's, you know, permission or whatever. She's playing this all up. And anyway, so, and her dad's kind of a stern sort of old school like fella and whatnot. And so anyways, buddy, he said, oh, good on you, mate. So I was like, okay, that's good. And her mom, of course, she was like, I knew it. I just knew it. And so, yeah, we were engaged. But then she had to fly back to Australia. And I had to stay in Canada because of my contract with the Navy. So I'd lined up a leave of absence, but I couldn't go for like 2 more months. So she went back to Australia. Well, actually, she thought she was going to come back to Canada. She was going to go back for a month in Australia, plan everything in the wedding, and then come back home. So in January, she flies back to Australia. She gets like everything set up for the wedding, thinking she's going to come back to Canada. But then my leave of absence comes through and I'm able to take a year away from the Navy. So I'm like, okay, I'm coming over to Australia. So the whole wedding was like, it was in December. So it was a year away. She'd planned the whole thing in like January. So for like 11 months, she was just like super chill because everything was like already lined up.
Nice.
Yeah. So. So the wedding came with a few surprises as well, because of course this is what my wife does. So the morning of the wedding, she'd arranged for like the car that she was supposed to be in. It was this like little blue convertible and whatever. The car that's supposed to pick her up comes and picks me up and my brother and my best man Troy. And so now I'm confused. I'm like, this is supposed to be her car. Why are you picking me up in this? And it's like, hey, well, whatever, you know, I guess it's just, you know, she'll figure something out or maybe something got mixed up, but whatever. I think things will go off without a hitch. And, so then we're in an outdoor venue. It's like this little homestead, like a little house and some trees and things like that. And a little creek kind of running in the background. It's a really beautiful venue in Australia in a city called Geelong. And so I'm sitting there like, now I'm feeling like really nervous, like before the wedding. And I thought I was going to be super calm, and I was calm. And then all of a sudden it just like hit me, you know, like I'm like marrying this girl. I'm like committing my life to her the rest of my life. And then I hear like click, clop, click, clop, click, clop. And there's this like Cinderella carriage coming down the road. Yeah. And then I was like, that's it.
Shoot.
Yeah. So then I was like done. I was like, I'm just a blubbering mess at this point. I was like, and which was very unusual. I was like, she never seen me cry before. So now I'm, you know, then the wedding comes, I'm supposed to try and like say my vows, and I totally can't. I'm just like an absolute mess, you know? But yeah, so she has a knack for like doing these things and setting up these little surprises and things that, yeah. So that was pretty special.
So you had a year leave from the Navy. Mm-hmm. Were you in Australia that whole time, or yeah. were you? Okay.
Yeah. So, and then, I had to go back, of course, because I still had a contract with the Navy, but we were able to take that year leave of absence. But then we fly back to Canada after a year of living in Australia, and I get shipped out like a week later. It's like, yeah, because my trade was engineer. Mm-hmm. And engineers were in like high demand at that time. There's a shortage of them. And so I got shipped out right away for like 3 months. And so here she's just like married this guy, and we'd only been married for 3 months because we got married in December, flew back to Canada in March. So we'd only been married for 3 months. She comes back to Canada and
immediately by herself.
Yeah. Yeah. Thankfully I have some really good friends who took good care of her. But actually I'm like, there's one other story I was going to mention just from the honeymoon. We nearly ended up spending our wedding night in the back seat of a car.
What?
So at our wedding, her brother, like her family are kind of like jokers and things like they eat. Yeah. Okay. And so one of the things they did was maybe not surprisingly, but they, you know, wrapped the entire car in like plastic wrap, but they'd also like tied all the doors shut with like fishing line. They filled the car with like 50 pounds of rice and like filled up with balloons and poppers and things like that. So, you know, the end of the wedding comes and we're set to drive out to this little seaside village because the city, Geelong, is on the ocean. And so we're going to drive out to this little oceanside village and have our honeymoon. It's a really beautiful spot, to this sleepy little village. We can't get into the dang car. Neither of us have like a knife to start cutting through this stuff. And it took us like an hour just to cut into this stupid car because they had wrapped it all so tight. So then it was like an hour's drive away to get to this little oceanside town where we're going to have our honeymoon. And we picked this really nice like boutique hotel. So it wasn't like a chain hotel. It was this really nice, like one-off boutique kind of hotel. And what we didn't realize is that weekend there was a music festival that happens every year in that town. When that music festival happens, like the entire town is fully booked out. And so we get to our hotel. It's now like midnight and like all the lights are off. We're like, no, what is happening? And we're like knocking on the door and nobody's answering. And so we're thinking like, what the heck, man? We're not even going to be able to get into like a hotel room because everything is booked out. And suddenly a light comes on like right at the back. And there was this lady and she finally comes back and she says, well, I thought you weren't coming. And so I was just going to head home for the night.
Oh, no.
Oh, so thankfully she was able to let us in and we did have our hotel room for our wedding night, but we probably, if we were there like 5 minutes later, we would have been stuck in our car. Yeah.
With all that rice.
Yeah. Oh, it's the worst because this dry rice, cause you know, it's hot in Australia and it just sits in the car and like this dry rice kind of like bakes and heats up and you think you got it all out and then there's like more like sneaking between like the cracks and crevices of the seats and things and just the smell and it was but that's all part of the fun, I think.
I guess you guys started off your married life with a bang.
we did. It was a good start.
So going back, how long were you deployed?
At that point I was gone for about 3 months.
3 months. So how did you guys handle deployment?
It was difficult and difficult for the reason that some deployments we're not really allowed a lot of communication back home. depending on what it is that we're doing. We would be doing sensitive things that we couldn't really talk much back home. They restrict communications. And we had satellite phone connectivity, like where we would get like 20 minutes a week, basically. And satellite phones. Yeah. And so satellite phones are like just horrible connection too, like 3 second lag or delay or something like that as well. And so you could use like 5 minutes a day kind of thing, or you just save it up for like one call. And so Michelle said she would like just take her phone with her everywhere because she never knew when I was going to call either, because I there was no like set time that I could call. It would depend if I was, I had to be off watch and we had to like not be doing things and we had to be in a certain location and so on. So it was really tough, but thankfully, some good friends of ours actually kind of adopted her and had her come and stay with them. They were older. Like I was friends with their kids kind of thing. So they became like surrogate kind of parents to her and took her in and said like, while he's gone, rather than you staying alone in this bachelor suite kind of next to the Navy base, which was a dodgy area of town, why don't you come and stay at our place? And so she did get like well taken care of, thankfully.
That's good.
Oh, that's really nice.
Yeah.
So what was it like when you guys reconnected? Because I know a lot of times military people after deployment, it's kind of hard.
Yeah. Well, here's another funny thing that sort of like dates this, but we were allowed to like write emails and like save them on a floppy disk and then give it to our communicator, who would then have to read the email to make sure that nothing sensitive was being said in the email before then sending it out. And then she would reply and they would have to like, you know, read it out, make sure, and then print it off and like bring it to us. And so that was how we kind of kept in touch, as I would regularly send emails to her. And what's funny is you're right. Everybody, like everyone in the engineering department was like, you know, giving me a hard time or whatever. But I was like, look, I have a wife that I love and I actually want to try and keep this going here.
Yeah.
And yeah. And so I understand to this day, I'll say like the military breeds divorced alcoholics. That's unfortunate what happens, but I was pretty determined not to let that happen. And so I use whatever means. In this case, it was email and a floppy disk that would like allow us to communicate kind of back and forth to sort of keep things going. So when we reconnected, the one thing I will say is like, after you've been apart for a couple months, it feels really special to be back together again in person. But we'd also had 2 years of just talking on the phone and being like an ocean apart on the other side of the world. So we sort of had an idea of what that was like. It wasn't like we'd never experienced that before.
That does make sense. It was helpful for you guys.
Yeah.
So when you got back and you guys were together, what was married life for you then?
I think it was pretty simple. So I would get back and basically I wanted to zone out and do virtually nothing, because deployment is usually quite busy and you're stuck in a floating steel box with a bunch of people and the same people you see day in and day out. And then it's just like, I just want to get home and like totally disconnect and not talk to anybody, not see anybody, because I've been locked in a steel box with a bunch of people for like 3 months. And she's like, wow, well, I haven't seen you for a while. Now we have to go and see all these people. We have all these friends to catch up with and this and that, and the next thing. And so, but we figured out kind of a way to make it work. I was like, okay, I need this amount of time after deployment to just kind of reset and whatnot. And then we can, you know, sort of resume our social life. So we kind of just figured out a way to make that work.
Were you in the Navy very long in the beginning of marriage?
3 years.
Oh, okay.
And then, so after 3 years, and it was close to 3 years, and I was getting deployed a lot, again, because there wasn't a lot of engineers. I was away on average about 280 days a year, which is quite a bit longer than the regulations were, like 186 days a year maximum or something. And I was doing like almost 100 days beyond that. And I was like, this is no way to have a married life with a wife who's like living halfway around the world away from her family, for me to be gone all the time. And so I came home one day and I said, you know what, why don't we just go teach English somewhere? And it was just this kind of random idea. I mean, this is in October of 2009. And in January of 2010, we were on a plane for Mexico. So yeah, we were just like, my contract was up at the end of December and I didn't renew. And I said, okay, let's just do this. So we hopped on a plane to Mexico without much of a plan. We just packed everything to a storage unit and off we go. And I remember we're sitting with each other, like flying to Mexico, being like, are we nuts? Like,
yeah,
what are we doing here? We don't even know, you know, a couple of like very white people flying to Mexico, and we're not going to a touristy place. We're going to Guadalajara, which is it's a big city in Mexico, but it's not a touristy place.
No.
And I'm like Casper, the friendly ghost. And my wife's got blonde hair as well. I was like, I don't know how this is going to go. But anyways, it actually went.
Spanish going into Mexico?
I had just a little bit, but it's because I had a, funnily enough, when Michelle and I were communicating back before we were together, I dated a girl from Mexico. And so I'd picked up some Spanish because I had a Mexican girlfriend. So, but she didn't have any, the thing that I've loved about the living in Mexico and the Mexicans is, they were super like open, they knew that we weren't great at Spanish, but they loved that we were trying, and they were super encouraging. And, what I'll say is, cause I quite enjoyed living in Mexico other than the cartel activity, which, we just tried to keep our head down, tried not to, keep a low profile, but we developed some good Mexican friends in there, and man, they're hospitable. They loved to have a good time. They were so like, they just didn't matter if we like sucked at speaking Spanish. They just loved that we were trying, and they didn't make us feel dumb or anything like that. Like they really made an effort. And we lived in a hacienda, like a sort of like a shared living. It was actually like a bunch of old horse stables. So it was like a series of rooms with an open courtyard, like open air courtyard, and a series of rooms in like a horseshoe shape. And then like a kitchen up on the second level kind of thing. It was just complete with cockroaches and bed bugs. Like this was the real deal. This is not high living in Mexico kind of thing. And, but hey, we made it work. We got to know the local taco vendors, like, cause there's about four or five of them. Cause we would walk up the street to the school where we're teaching English, and man, they're like grilling their tacos on the curb, and oh, it smelled so good. I ate a lot of tacos down there.
How long did you guys stay in Mexico?
We were there for about 6 months. And the plan was to actually carry on down to South America. So we're going to fly down to Peru. Mm-hmm. But then we got job offers in Italy. So we ended up going, okay, I guess we're actually going to go over to Europe instead. Pardon me. And so we ended up flying to London, where her sister was living at the time, and then flying over to Italy. And we ended up overall spending 3 summers in Italy teaching English and running English camps for children over the next, because we ended up traveling for about 3 years. We thought we were going for, I don't know, 3 months, and ended up being gone away from home for 3 years.
Wow.
What is it like traveling? Yeah. What is it like traveling with your spouse like that? Because you don't necessarily have a place to call home.
So here's what's interesting is I say that we survived the first 3 years were being apart a lot because it's being deployed a lot. The next 3 years we're like together 24/7 traveling. Travel will test any relationship will be tested by travel, because, you know, for a lot of people, it was like, oh man, you guys are living the dream. You're traveling around the world. You're seeing all these countries and blah, 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 you know, and we had a travel blog back in the day because again, social media wasn't like a super big thing. So we had to, I could probably dig it up somewhere in the interwebs, but anyways, where we'd like post pictures of what was going on, and we would send like email, like chain letters and things like that of what we were doing. But it's also really tiring to like not have a place to call home where you know that this is my permanent location. And so it was, there was one stretch where I think for about 4 months straight, we never spent more than 2 weeks in the same location. Yeah. And so it really starts to wear on you. Like it's kind of exhausting after a while. Yep. Like, man, I just want to. And so, and my brother was living in Turkey. So thankfully we were able to go over to Turkey. So my sister-in-law lived in London. So that's on one side of Europe. And my brother lived in Turkey on the other side of Europe. So thankfully we had like these kind of two stopping points. So we ended up going to Turkey for about a month and just like crashing there and not doing a whole lot just to kind of unwind. But I will say, traveling was also when I kind of went through one of the most difficult experiences in my life. And that was when we went through a traumatic experience living in South Africa. So we'd met a South African in Mexico who then came to visit us when we were living in Poland, because that was one of the countries we ended up living in.
Okay.
He then invited us to come down to South Africa and do some work with an organization that his parents had founded. And it was down there that I was like jumped and attacked by 4 guys, and they tried to smash my head in with bricks and rocks, basically. Okay. So that was a little twist of the donkey's tail.
Yeah.
So that'll also test a relationship. and just for the sake of time, you know, maybe another time we can share the details. And I've talked about it quite a bit, but essentially, like, it's extreme. Like, there's the physical trauma of going through that. And then there's like the sort of the emotional and the mental trauma. And that really sort of set us up for, or set me up really to go through a lot of emotional mental health struggles kind of through my 30s. So, 'cause that happened when I was 29 years old and was totally unprepared to sort of deal with the fallout of like trauma and PTSD. And it really brought me to like quite a low point where I became like a binge eating food addict and I gained about 120 pounds. Like I became obese, like morbidly obese. And I really started to like hate myself and hate who I'd become. 'Cause I used to be an athlete. I used to be like a weightlifter and I was a basketball and a volleyball player. And now I was just like obese. And I hated myself enough at that time that I tried to convince my wife to leave me. I was like, you should just go. Your life would be better without me in it. My wife is stubborn. And yeah. And she wouldn't give up on me, which is really amazingly remarkable and why I'm very, very fiercely loyal to her to this day.
So while you were going through this, and I know you said you tried to like push her away and things like that, how long did you do that for before you realized she's not going anywhere?
And it wasn't necessarily a daily occurrence, but it would just, I would hit these really, really low periods. And there actually was a period where she went back to Australia because she had to get her permanent residency for Canada. And so, because this happened in 2011, in 2014, she went back to Canada, back to Australia for a year. So over that kind of 3-year stretch, it was a really rocky stretch in her marriage. Like in a sense, we always had that chemistry where when I was maybe in a good headspace, we could kind of connect like we used to, but it was still pretty rocky. But when she was gone for almost a year, because when you apply for permanent residency outside of Canada, you're not allowed to re-enter Canada until you're granted that status. And so she had to stay over in Australia for almost a year. And I didn't see her in that stretch of time. And it was a really like low and kind of dark time for me because I was like, my wife is gone. I'd also gotten injured. Just to add to that, I'd gotten injured and I was at that time, I'd been a power line technician. So building, you know, utility poles and towers and high voltage electricity lines and things. And I got injured and I couldn't do the trade anymore. So I'd lost my trade. That was going to be like our ticket to having a really, because power line technician is a really high paying job because it's quite dangerous. So I lost that and my wife was gone. And I just remember like sitting in my basement, you know, eating an entire chocolate cake, like hating myself. But, you know, as the time came closer to when she was able to come back to Canada, you know, I realized just like how much I'd missed her and how much I, like, obviously we'd communicated. And by this point in time, we have social media, we have, you know, video calling technology and things like that. But, I was really excited to have her back in my life. And I realized that, like, you know, no matter what, like I didn't actually want to lose her. It was really like just my own mental health struggles that were leading me to feel like the way that I felt about myself. I had thought that other people felt that way about me. I didn't realize that they didn't feel the same way. We call it projection. I understand that now, but back then I didn't realize it. So I was taking how I felt about myself and assuming she must see me in the same way that I seemed, like the way that I hated myself. I thought she must hate me the same way and just be kind of disgusted with me, but it wasn't true. You know, she still loved me.
So after she came back to Canada and, you know, you had that realization, what was life? Did you guys move around again or were you guys kind of set in Canada?
Yeah. So we'd left. So we moved from British Columbia, which is on the West Coast in Victoria, out to Alberta, where we presently live, in a city called Red Deer. And we'd had actually come out here for me to be in that trade. And Victoria has like a very mild winter because it's on the West Coast, so on Vancouver Island, like you might get snow every couple of years kind of thing.
Yeah.
In Alberta, you get snow for like 6 to 7 months a year. Yeah. So, and I was trying to remember where you ladies are from. I don't know if you're from like the northern US or anything like that, where you have reasonably serious winters.
Yeah. We're
from Illinois.
Okay. Yeah. So you have an idea of what like a pretty hard winter looks like.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, and it was really hard for my wife now, because now we're in a place where you get these really long, cold, hard winters up here. Ooh. And, so she kind of went through her own struggles as well. But fortunately, just by random chance, at that time I'd been running a nutrition and supplement store, and this lady came in to buy some stuff, and I got talking to her, and it turns out she was running an improv comedy troupe. And so then I convinced my wife to get back into performing and get back into theater. And that kind of reignited something for her as well, gave her a reason to not hate the city that we were living in. And just want to leave constantly. And so that kind of warmed her up, and you know, she's really blossomed in the theater community in the years since then. And for myself, I hit like this really low point where I was going to buy some life insurance, and I had to pay what's known as a rider. I had to pay like extra on my life insurance policy because I was more likely to die sooner because of like my weight and my blood pressure and all these health markers that were because I was obese. And that was like this wake up call for me. I was like, you know, I can't keep living like this. And so I ended up hiring a coach, and he was pretty incredible, actually. Again, I still kind of thought like when I was hiring a coach, it was someone who's going to like, you know, crack the whip and yell at me and tell me I'm a loser and trying to whip me into shape, that kind of thing. And he was actually very kind, very compassionate, and really allowed me to say what I say, like wrestle with my demons in the light, just allowed me to work through my struggles without judgment. He showed me a lot of compassion. And why I share that is because it really dramatically, positively changed my relationship with my wife, because as my relationship to myself and to my body, even though it was still a work in progress, as that started to change and I started to show myself more compassion, I was now able to show more compassion and more kindness towards my wife as well. And so going through that process was really quite transformational and really, you know, moved our marriage to kind of a new level.
That's great.
Wow. So you've been married 17 years, correct?
Yes. Yeah.
If you could go back and tell yourself something right when you got married at year one, what would you tell yourself?
I would probably say something like I wouldn't want to spoil it, I guess. Like I wouldn't want to just be like, okay, there's going to be some really, really hard times ahead and you're going to, you know, I don't think that would be fair. Mm-hmm. But what I would say is it's not all going to be roses, but you are strong enough to get through this together.
That's good.
It's really beautiful.
Real good.
Yeah. It's like no spoiler alerts, really, no details, but.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, you know, sometimes we think we'd like to be able to see the future, but if we knew these terrible things were coming up, it would literally hang over our head until. Yeah. So, yeah.
So what's been your favorite part about marriage so far?
Boy, that's tough to pick. So here's what kind of comes to mind is really like my wife is also my closest friend. And some people would like, you know, argue, like I've got my guy friends that I hang out with, and I've got like particularly close, you know, buddy, but there's something about being with somebody through everything, through all of the worst, all of the most difficult, all of the ugly stuff. And you go through that together, and there's this bond that you form that is just really unbreakable. And we've been through like a lot together. So I would say having somebody who knows me almost as well as I know myself and still loves me with every fiber of her being, it's pretty cool to go through life with someone like that. And I feel like I have something worth more than all the money in the world can buy, because I've invested probably almost half of my life into this relationship, almost 20 years into this relationship. And because of that, like that time, we don't get that time back. I can't buy that. No amount of money can buy that time back. And that gives me something that, like, if I was to lose her, no money in the world could replace her. Yeah. And so I try to remind myself every day that I got something worth more than all the money in the world. And I have something that so many people wish they could have. And the funny thing is, I think it's actually possible for people, but it requires a shift in perspective about what I think a marriage is like really about.
What would that shift be?
Well, so I remember when we first get married, there's this idea like we're in love and it's just going to be amazing because we love each other so much, but your brain can't keep you high forever. Like eventually things start to become sort of normal and routine, but also that maybe the idea that a marriage is going to fix you or fix a relationship, it's like that it's not going to. Like a white dress and a wedding cake isn't going to fix something that's already dysfunctional. It's just, you know, it's a deeper commitment to something that is already pretty good, if not fantastic. And so, but also this idea that I'm there to somehow fix her, she's there to somehow fix me, or this idea that like, this is what you have to do and this is what I have to do. The thing, I think there's this, we live in a time right now, it feels like there's a lot of selfishness in society. And I think social media has really fostered a lot of this as well, where it's a lot of self-centered, like it's hard to not be self-centered when so much of what we post on social media is self-centered and so much of what we see is self-centered. It can't help but start to shift our perspective. But this idea that like I show up to like serve and honor my wife, I don't lose in that equation. Maybe there's this idea that like somehow doing this makes my life worse. I'm like, it makes my life better because like my wife loves me even more. Like there's something about, you know, it's cliche to say it's better to give than receive, but like there's something about it. It just, so this different idea, this relationship isn't about what I can take out of this relationship. It's about what I can give into it. Mm. And then come what may, but because I'm with an amazing woman, there's so much better coming my way than if I was like by myself.
Oh, I like that.
Like that's so much.
Yeah.
Because I've always, like I've heard of that, like we're selfish and things like mm-hmm. this. I see it every day. But the thing is, the way that you word it makes it sound what I've been trying to say in a way, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I know the heart of the podcast is wondering like, is marriage worth it? And I'll save that question then in case you have a few more questions, but I mean, you probably already have an idea of what my answer might be.
Before we get to that. I do have a couple of more questions.
Of course.
So what does an average day for you, what does an average day in your marriage look like now?
Yeah, well, we have a kid and another one on the way now. So, yeah, thank you. And I think that's a really interesting thing as well. So we were together my son was born in 2021. So he's two. So we were together for like 15 years before having kids. And I think there's more people doing that where they're opting to have kids a bit later in life. It wasn't necessarily exactly what we had planned. But I look back and I realize like all of the sort of mental health struggles I went through in my 30s, like I wouldn't have been a very good parent. Like a part of me wanted to be, but it wasn't until I kind of went through this transformation where I really changed my relationship to myself and really developed a healthy emotional relationship with myself and healthy masculine emotions that I was much better positioned to be a father. And I think we look at this little kid every day and we're like, blown away by how much we love this little human being there. And tell you what, like any husbands out there, like some people are like, don't go to the delivery room, don't watch her give birth. I'm like, no, you get your ass in there and you watch this happen. You watch your wife and all her power and strength do something that's basically a miracle. It is like, I mean, my respect for mothers, I mean, just witnessing pregnancy alone, but witnessing her going through childbirth, I was like blown away. My respect for mothers went up like 1,000,000%. It is just the most unbelievable, like selfless act. It's incredible. It's a miracle. And, you know, when you hold that little human being in your arms for the first time and this helpless little baby just kind of stares up at you and, oh man, like it's like this little kid, like my life is never going to be the same in the best possible way. But now this is a life that I'm responsible for. Like, wow, that's quite a feeling. Everything changes because you don't sleep. I remember being so exhausted, like a couple days after birth, I'm trying to give my wife a bit of a break. Now I run my own business. And so I have some flexibility. Mm-hmm. I've been running my own businesses since about 2015. And I run online businesses. So that gives me some flexibility. I was rocking this, he was only a few days old, and then they do this little froggy scrunch, I call it. So he's like scrunched up and like nestled into my neck there and just kind of sleeping away blissfully. Like, and I'm just like trying to stay awake, watching the clock tick. And I'm like, just 5 more minutes, stay awake for 5 more minutes. Like just so exhausted, you know, and then 5 more minutes and 5 more minutes, you know, and just trying to make it happen. Child, like having kids, like nothing really prepares you for it, because there's like, I don't think even having a dog prepares you for it, you know, or having a pet, but it is like, it can be the absolute best thing in the world. You know, when it's done between like two people who truly love each other. And I think he's brought us together even more, because like every day we look at this kid and every day he just like surprises us, something new and delightful comes out. And we're like, wow, this little like beautiful human being is ours. He's our little boy. And of course he has no idea. He's just being him. Like,
yeah.
And I think because we are pretty emotionally stable and we have a really strong relationship, and we really love each other, like that gives him the sense of emotional security. And so, you know, he has his meltdowns like any toddler does, but he's a pretty happy little kid. And honestly, when you get a hug from a little kid, and it's like pure hug, like there's just, it's like the absolute best thing in the world. And so I absolutely love being a dad. I wouldn't trade it for the world. Like, it's just amazing.
That's so sweet. So with being parents, how do you guys find time for each other still?
Gotta be creative. it's, you know, because I think somewhat baked in that question probably is I'm wondering about intimacy as well, because how do you maintain, you know, can I say it? How do you maintain a sex life after having a kid and, you know, he sleeps in our room, he's got a little bed beside ours, but we're cool with that. Like I think Western culture is like the only one where we isolate our kids in another room in the house.
Yeah.
You know, every other culture around the world, they're like their kids sleep with them. And I'm like, I'm all right with that, because I mean, like, again, middle of the night, this little kid sort of crawls across our bed and snuggles into my arms and just goes to sleep blissfully. And like, it's the best feeling in the world. Like who would be annoyed at that? Like all he wants to do is feel safe and secure. But to go back to this, yeah, you have to be intentional about it. It won't happen by accident, because now time is much more limited. I mean, running a business or running a couple of businesses is pretty busy.
Yeah.
So I have to, like, I literally put time in my schedule specifically for being with them so that nothing else can get booked in there, because otherwise it just like, I could fill it up with calls. I could fill it up with, you know, producing content, things like that.
Yeah.
And so every morning, I block off from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. and we have breakfast together and we spend time together. You know, he knows, he says, "Dad, I changed bum." He knows, like, I changed the first diaper in the morning. But I've got him tricked. So as soon as I done changing his bum, I stand him up on the diaper table and he has to give me, he doesn't have to, you know, but I've just trained him to give me a hug. And he's at like the perfect height, because the diaper, when he stands up on the diaper table, he's basically head height with me. And so we change his bum and then he just gives me a hug. And then we do, we call it super jump, which is he pretends to jump and then I throw him onto a stack of pillows on the bed. And, you know, but part of the reason why this is so important is because it reminds us like why we do these things. Like why am I even working? Why am I trying to provide a living for my family? Like, it's not because I want to be a workaholic. It's because I want to have times like this with my kid. And so we established something called, we originally called it like morning snuggle time. And it was, you know, we just kind of bring him into the bed and let him sort of cuddle with us. And we'd all just kind of cuddle together as a family. And it really is about just connecting to the two most important human beings in my life. And now there's a third one on the way. So, or another kid. So there'll be a third most important human in my life, you know, but connecting with them and remembering what this is about. Why are we doing this? Why are we doing anything that we do? It's to have moments like that.
Yeah.
I think I still missed answering your question about like, being creative. So we are creative. I'm like, I don't know how much detail you want to know. I'm like, make use of shower time. be creative with it. Sometimes you do things a little quieter when the kid's asleep and you're like, okay, let's hope the bed doesn't creak too much, that kind of stuff. But, you figure out ways to make it happen, and you really wouldn't know what you would do until you're kind of in that situation, but you go, yeah, we'll figure out a way to make it work. But yeah, you do have to be intentional about it if you want to keep that spark alive. I think for a number of years, I probably kind of took our natural chemistry for granted, where I was like, we already have a great relationship, so I don't have to work on it. But yeah, it is worth it again to invest in that relationship.
Where do you see yourself, your guys, your family in like 10 years?
That's a tricky one, because the world is a super unpredictable place right now. Like, it's a little crazy. Ideally, probably living in Australia. So we'll probably leave Canada at some point in time, go to live in Australia, because my wife would enjoy being back in her home country and near her family and whatnot. And probably somewhere near the beach, because she loves the ocean. I mean, I think the ocean is pretty awesome too, but excuse me. And so we would probably be over there. I guess we'd have the two kids. I'll be close to 50. That part of it is kind of funny for me when I think, you know, I had my first kid at 39. My second one is going to be at when I'm 41. Like, they'll be like, hey, it's good you brought your grandpa to graduation, kind of thing. But that's actually my incentive to try to stay healthy and like stay in shape and whatnot as well, is because I'm like, man, I want to be able to have like be in my kids' lives, not just like sit on the sideline, but I want to be able to be physically present in their life. And so kind of that's where I'd like to be. I'll hopefully still be podcasting. I really, really love that. I love getting to have conversations like this. And so that's a true passion of mine, and I'll probably still be doing my nutrition coaching as well, because I absolutely love it. So I feel like really lucky or really fortunate that I get to do some of the things that I love the most in this world, which is talk to people and coach people through difficult situations in life.
Nice. Well, Jonathan, we want to say thank you so much for taking the time out to come and talk to us. But before we let you go, we have one last question that we ask all of our guests. And that question is,
is marriage worth it?
I'd say 1,000,000% yes. But I would say you do want to make sure it's with the right person. You don't want to rush into it with the idea it's going to change things. But marriage is 1,000% worth it, especially if you invest in it. If you invest in it, it gets more and more valuable. I just love every day like having my wife in my life. And I just really couldn't picture life without her.
You heard it. Yes.
All right. And there you have it. It is an 1,000% yes from Jonathan. Would you like to plug any of your things?
Oh, sure. I'd love for people to have a listen. Podcast is called Between the Before and After. And we share stories of people who've overcome significant adversity in life. So whether it's cancer survivors, trauma survivors, PTSD, war heroes, things like that. It's really incredible, the people I get to talk to in conversation. So I love that. And if people are curious about what I do with nutrition coaching, freedomnutritioncoach.com.
You can follow us on TikTok, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Marriage Worth It. You can also email us at marriageworthit@gmail.com.
I'm Monique.
And I'm Janelle.
And this has been
Is Marriage Worth It?